Welcome to the Two Regular Teachers podcast. My name is Rick Kayler Thompson.
My name's Adam Lavaz. Thanks for joining us for episode 55. And that beer certainly tastes good. School is over for term one, Rick.
That's some sip there, Adam.
Thank you very much. We're on a podcast here. I have to actually make it sound like I'm doing it. If I just took a normal sip, you wouldn't hear what's going on.
That's exactly right. And we wish all the Victorian teachers all the best for their term one holidays and all the other Australian teachers when yours come, which aren't far away if they haven't started already. And Adam, you've had a bit of leave and you've come back for this episode. Thanks for returning for our final episode.
Pleasure. I can't actually talk about my leave too much because I know in amongst our friendship group, I put a picture of a beer I was having probably on the Wednesday last week up. I was in Bright. I spent a bit of time there and got absolutely smashed for it. So I don't actually want to talk about my leave at all, and let's pretend I'm not on leave at all.
Well, you know what? We've spoken about long service leave on our podcast before, and that all the people who aren't on long service leave don't want to hear from the people who are on long service leave, Adam. We don't want to hear that you've landed in Bali or something like that.
But having said that, at the same time, I thought my friends would appreciate the fact that I've taken a couple of weeks. I've deserved it. It's my first long service leave ever. And I thought, good on you, mate, you know, enjoy that beer. But no, I had a lot of jealous friends that afternoon.
Look, you have earned it, and in all seriousness, you have. And anyone else who's taken it for the first time this year. Now, Adam, being the final episode of Term 1, we always like to try and get a special guest, and we've worked really hard on this special guest. Mm-hmm. If people who are listening really carefully might have heard the odd hint dropped since prior to Christmas.
Yeah, last year.
2015, and we finally got the man in.
We have.
An old friend.
Yeah, an old friend would be the way to put it.
Referred to you in previous podcasts as...
The hairy man.
The hairy man.
No, I didn't just say that. Oh, you said it as well.
I did.
Yeah.
And the beard.
Yeah, the beard. Yeah.
But proper name. We'd like to welcome our good friend Cam O'Neill to Two Regular Teachers. Welcome, Cam.
Pleasure to be here, boys. I was supposed to be on here last year, but it's nice to finally be able to make it.
That's nice to have you on, mate. And obviously, we went to uni together. That's a bit of background in there. And you've been teaching for 10 years now, is it?
10 years, yes.
Yep. And where have you spent a lot of your time in terms of in the classroom in that time?
I've been at three different schools.
Yep.
I taught grade 3 and 4 for nearly the first 7 years, 6 or 7 years of my teaching career. I've had some grade 1 and 2s for a couple of years and grade 5 and 6 for the last couple of years now.
We're pretty excited to have him on, aren't we, Rick? We've been trying for a while and pretty excited to have him on.
Yeah, we are. And Cam, I know that as Lavaz mentioned, we did 4 years at uni together, and we're going to touch on, for our listeners, we are going to touch on some of our memories during the podcast from that time, but we're also going to kind of mark time with Cam, because there's three of us who graduated at the same time and have been teaching about the same time. So we kind of mark time and look at, I guess, where we think education is. And I think we'll probably have some interesting things to say, Cam, I reckon, about that.
I hope so.
Yeah. Well, we hope so too. Well, I was just thinking then, we've known each other almost, I think next year we'll know each other for 15 years. Like 15 years in that time, that 4 years at uni, next year 11 years, that's it's a long time.
It is. Now, Cam, you were a mature age student like myself, weren't you? We're of similar age. What sort of experiences did you have in between, that period between high school and starting uni with us?
Between high school and uni, I'd actually started another degree. Did that for a couple of years, but didn't quite find that to be the path I wanted to go down. So I was working in hospitality. I was managing bars and that sort of thing for quite a few years. And then all of a sudden, I got to a point where I decided I don't want to spend the rest of my working life working shift work and night work and weekend work. And since having a family of my own, I've been really glad that I made that decision a long time ago. It's made a big difference to the way I can spend time with my family in particular.
And that's the beauty of teaching, is that once you get that ongoing contract, you've got that job. You know what your hours are, you know the expectations, and you know that, no, I can, I've got these 2 weeks holidays coming up, I can actually plan a family holiday or plan something and know that I'm going to get that time, and that's not going to change.
And I think more importantly too, though, it was a chance to actually do something a bit more meaningful. Working in hospitality is you go in, you work for the night, and then you go home and you do the same thing day after day, whereas I don't think with teaching there's ever been a day that's been the same.
And it's interesting you say about those experiences. I completely agree with what you said just then, but it's interesting about those experiences you had before, because I was having a conversation with another teacher recently about those people who kind of, and this is not to say that they're better than other teachers, but the ones who've had a little bit of that sort of experience, whether in other jobs before getting into teaching, I think certainly, I don't think there's anything detrimental to that. I think everything that, all the experience you got from those other jobs benefits you in teaching. Would you agree?
Oh, absolutely. I think you've had people who've had a bit of a taste of the real world outside of the existence of the school. I think it's actually quite important. You see a number of particularly young graduates who come through and they've never been outside of the school system.
Yeah, exactly. You're absolutely right.
And I actually agree. I've seen, you know, fresh graduates come in who are still 22, you know, just turned 23, who have literally gone from high school to university to and back to school again. And I'm not saying they're not any better or they're any worse.
No, because
they do lack a little bit of life skills.
Mm. Well, they can. I think I know some teachers now who I've worked with and work with who did come straight out of high school who are excellent. Mm. But I think it's just to say that those, you know, having those life experiences does help. Now, before we get into it, Cam, I am looking forward to this because as our listeners have just heard, and I had many a discussion with Cam when we became friends at uni, that you always get a nice, considered discussion. So I'm really looking forward to this episode.
Yeah, me too, I'm very excited. So let's not waste any time. Let's get straight into it. So Cam and Rick, first thing we want to talk about tonight is something I don't think we've actually broached on the podcast before, and it's something that I think is a struggle for every single school and every single teacher at some stage in their career, and that's a change in leadership and staff during the actual school year. Now, I know for a fact that for myself, there has been one time in my teaching career where a principal announced that they were leaving, that they were finishing up, and there was that upheaval of then there was sort of two terms of a fill-in principal while they decided who the other one would be, and then a fresh principal came in. So really, across the course of sort of, you know, four terms, we have three different principals. Now, it does make a big difference in the tone of the school and the positivity, negativity, and the way everyone approaches their teaching. And I want to throw it over to you both and sort of say, you know, has that occurred in your teaching career? And what was the changes and the effect it had on the school as a whole?
Well, the first thing that I'll say, and I'll throw it to Cam in a minute because I think he's had an experience similar, is that let's talk about leadership first. So if leadership changes during the year, say principal or assistant principal, or I suppose if a principal changes over during that Christmas period, I think a lot of us have seen or heard of experiences, and I've had one where perhaps a principal leaves to take another position, and while the next principal position is being advertised or planned, the assistant principal might step in as the acting principal. And then that assistant principal might apply for the job. And then there's that kind of transition where it can get awkward because the staff might really enjoy and are used to this assistant principal in the acting role. And then the time can come when, and this is where I've experienced this, where that person doesn't get the job and someone new comes in. And initially there can be a lot of things from staff. There can be backlash, there can be relief, there can be indifference. And then it can also be difficult because you're not really sure how to maybe approach the acting prin that didn't get the job. My main thing that I've noticed at the schools that it's happened to, that the initial one is the staff that have been there for a long time do, particularly behind closed doors, you hear about that backlash side of things. Yeah. Cam, you've had an experience similar. What are your observations?
Oh, I have. A number of years ago, we had a principal who decided to retire, and we had a principal appointed from another school who was looking to change over, came into the role for a bit over a term, I think it was, and then the department went through their whole process and another principal was appointed to the role. It can get a bit difficult when we had the acting principal came in and tried to make some real significant cultural changes in the school with a really strong welfare focus and initiated a whole different range of things to try and change the way that the school was going. Not so much change the way the school was going, but to try and really put a big focus on the welfare of the school. And then we had another principal was appointed to the role eventually, and their focus was a lot more on academic stuff. So you have a change, and that's not to say that one was better than the other or anything like that. But
is that two changes of culture then in a short space of time or attempt at?
Yeah, you have someone who wants to go in one particular direction, and then you have someone who has their own ideas in another direction, and you have a lot of changes very quickly.
Can I jump in there and say, though, that you mentioned that the acting principal that came in wanted to make significant changes. To you both, is that the job of the acting principal? Should the acting principal come in and make changes, or sit back and go, you know what, at the moment I'm only an acting principal. Whatever this school has in place, we go with that. I can make subtle tweaks and changes to suit who I am and things. Is it their role to come in and go make significant changes, knowing in the back of their mind, you know what, I may not get this role, I may not get this job, and making big changes then means that someone else is going to come in, make big changes, and it's really going to change things in a big way.
I think it is, because who else is it? And I think, you know, like there's no one waiting in the wings who's left, you know, a list of things that need to be completed. I think this person is, if this person does do that, they are being proactive. I can see your point. My thinking is, well, they're entitled to, Cam.
Yeah, I think they are definitely entitled to. I think it also depends on the nature of the person who's come in and how experienced they are. Yeah. We had a person come in who was a very experienced principal, and in their mind they had certain things that they felt very strongly would work well for our school. And so they're doing it for all the right reasons, and with also the hope that they're going to land the job in the end. So they're feeling, I want to hit the ground running, and I also want to show what I want to do with this school. So I think they need to do that. They can't just sit on their hands for a term or longer.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's funny you say that, because I respectfully, very respectfully, disagree. Like, I do disagree with that, in the sense that a prin that comes into a new school that is an acting principal should go, you know what, I need to get to know my staff, I need to get to know what they've done here, I need to sit back and go, right, I need to watch this in action, what's working, what's not working, and take that with me. So when I sit down for a job interview in front of all these people, I can say, look, I've spent a term getting to know this staff, getting to know the way this school works, you know, I really want to change this, I really want to do this, I think I can really improve that, I really like how this is going, so I want to keep that going. I actually think it's their role to sit back and observe and allow the staff just to continue, knowing in the back of their minds that, you know what, if I change everything and I don't get this job, it's really going to make things difficult for the staff here. Now, I understand, again, where you said before, I understand where both of you are coming from. They've kind of got to show their hand a bit, don't they, and say, this is who I am, this is what I want to do, this is what I'm all about, to give them that understanding. So
maybe it depends on how long they have in that acting role. If it's quite a long time, then I would argue that they are entitled to then try some of those things, so they've got the evidence when they went to interview. But you're right, if it's a short time, then I agree with you that it probably should be sit back, watch, you know, let things occur, you know, take you know, take notes, and let the things play out, so you can get a feel for the school. I think, yeah,
I was going to jump in there. Can I throw to you with this one too, Cam, about the change in leadership, and I have experienced this as well. Do you find as well that when the new principal comes in from the old one, a lot of the time there's comparisons? You know, the old leadership or the old principal did it this way, the old thing did it this way, this is how we used to do it. Did you find that there was a lot of that going on?
I think you find that you have vastly different styles with different principals. I think you're especially finding now at this time, you've still got the old school principals who have been in the system for a really long time and very set in the way that they want to do things and the way that they want their schools to run. And you've got a different generation of principals coming through who are a lot more, I think, hands-on curriculum-wise, and with the programs that they would like to initiate into the schools, and are probably more up-to-date with department initiatives and that sort of thing.
Ken, do you think that's why some principals who maybe are a surprise appointment to some people, would get the job? Because they've almost been sent in with an agenda. Do you think sometimes, and I have heard that things can come from above to say, this school needs some redirection, or this school's data needs lifting. We know you've got those skills that you just outlined then. You know, we want you to come in here and shake up the place. Do you think that's pretty common these days?
I think so. I think more of a focus, particularly in the last 5 or 6 years, I think being more, a lot more, schools are a lot more data driven, and the department focus seems to be a lot more on what does the data show. And I think principals coming in who are a lot more au fait with being able to work with data, analyse data, build data, are going to be a lot more are going to be a lot more closely looked at for roles, particularly going forward from now.
And it's interesting. I wonder how long that is going to actually take place, because you know data is being not, I wouldn't say hammered, but a lot of people are starting to talk about it more and going, are we missing sight of what teaching's actually about? Are we just so focused on data and putting people in place to do data that we're actually missing the point of actually teaching itself? But anyway,
that probably leads into our next topic, Adam. Actually,
it does lead into our next topic, but. Yeah, look, if anyone out there has had the same thing happen to them, changes in leadership, changes in staff, and had that upheaval and some of the differences, again, we'd always love to hear from you on the blog or on Twitter or on Facebook. You can drop us a line there for some great discussion.
Well, boys, as we said in the outset, it's about just over 10 years since we graduated, and so which means we've been, it's a bit over 10 years since we've been in the job. And we often talk about those uni days, and I've been thinking in the lead-up to having Cam on about how teaching has changed since we graduated, but probably more like how the job has changed and how is what we envisaged and what we looked forward to as a student teacher, how has that changed? Like, has everything that we imagined happened or not? And how do we feel about the job after about 10 years? And I mean, look, bear it in mind that you're kind of fresh when you come out of uni and you do get to see only a taste of some of the tough stuff when you're on teaching rounds, and then you go back to uni and you reflect, and then everything becomes kind of warm and fuzzy again, like it kind of does, doesn't it? And it's really not until you get into the day-to-day grind that you get the real, so we need to kind of accept that and say, yeah, okay, it is harder when you're working full-time. But I just wonder, and I'll throw to you first, Cam, as our guest, what sort of pops into your head first when you think about how you saw teaching when you were at uni, and particularly when you graduated, and how you see it now? What's one big thing that you maybe you didn't envisage that plays a really big part these days?
I think most teachers would probably agree, particularly in the last 10 years, that the amount of work required has increased significantly. The amount of time that we spend planning has increased significantly. The amount of other requirements that we need to fulfill seems to continually go up. I think one of the big things for me that's different to what I initially thought was the autonomy that I would have as a classroom teacher. I think when I first began teaching, I think I had a lot of autonomy in the way that I decided to structure my lessons, in the content of lessons that I had, and being able to take a path which suited my students but also suited myself. Something I've noticed in the last few years, and I think it's happened not only in my school but in a lot of schools, is that particular teaching approaches which are very prescriptive in the way that you run your lessons seem to have become the norm almost. And in some ways it has changed things for the better, because teachers are a lot more cognizant of being the same as, or teaching the same content and doing things in the same way as other grades in their school of the same level. So across the school, you're getting consistency. I think that's been a big change.
I'm just going to cut in, because I think consistency with that is important. I'm a believer now of consistency with maybe language that you're using, some of the content. But getting back to your autonomy thing, I think it's a shame if you're losing that individualism, perhaps, for want of a better word, that teachers have to maybe deliver the content. I don't think it should matter how it's delivered. If you've got some sort of quirk that you use or something that works, I think you should go for it. And look, and I might see you do something and think, I want to use that quirk that Cam used. That's fine, but you should still be open to that.
And I want to jump in there and actually say the first word that came to mind for me was, when I got out into teaching, was freedom. Freedom to have your way of teaching. I want to do an issue of the week, you know, where we look at it, where we analyze this and do that. And I kind of feel like you just don't have time to do that anymore inside the data and the assessment and what the expectations are. You don't have the freedom. I also want to go on with what you said as well about the quirks and all that sort of stuff. I think the big word is collaboration, isn't it? Everyone wants to collaborate and work as a team. I kind of also feel like, though, that teachers are becoming a little bit more keeping their cards close to their chest in the way that they teach. You know, you might have someone in your team that you go in and you go, how'd you go with this lesson? And they talk about how they taught it, and you go, oh, you didn't share that with us. That's a great idea. Why didn't you sort of share that way of teaching with us? Because of the cutthroat nature of teaching, particularly with contracts, that people kind of want to keep it so they can go, well, this is how I do it, and, you know, look really fantastic. rather than actually wanting to share it. They want that collaboration, they want that sharing. I think if you had a team full of people who are on ongoing contracts, I think you'd find that'd be fine. But if you've got contracted teachers and you've got this sort of stuff, there generally can be a little bit more defensive about sharing things and wanting to keep it because they want to look fantastic in front of everyone else. So
I haven't been in a situation, I've never myself found myself in a situation where you have people who you sort of think to yourself, you're playing a game because you're worried about your own personal job. I've never had that experience. I have heard from other schools where people feel that that happens, and I think that's really unfortunate because people need to be able to have really open relationships with their teams and people within their school. I think the other thing about the more prescriptive nature of programs such as Reader's Workshop and writing programs and that sort of thing is it is really prescriptive in it's timetabled down to the second pretty much. And I know that, you know, sometimes that doesn't actually suit my personal style. I like going off on a tangent, particularly when the students are finding something really engaging.
Exactly.
And you feel you almost feel guilty if you go overtime 5 minutes in one part because it's going to affect your whole timetable for the rest of the day.
And yet some research is saying that we should be getting the kids to drive the learning more. And that if you need to stay on a topic for longer or something, that you stay on it for longer.
And it's funny you bring that up too, because what's happening this year, we've got the Rio Olympics. And I always thought back when I started teaching the Olympics, I would just almost make a whole term out of the Olympics and do a mini Olympics and writing about it and doing these sorts of things. But at the same time, you start looking at what you're expected to be teaching in reading and writing and doing those sorts of things. You don't, you kind of feel like you don't have the freedom. What happens if your inquiry topic is something totally different to the Olympics, where you can't link it into your inquiry, you know, because you're expected to teach that inquiry? It makes it really hard. Whereas I thought when I graduated, when the Olympics come around, I'll be doing stuff to do with the Olympics. I'll have displays, like news articles up there that kids could bring in. We can talk about, we can watch highlights. We could, you know, integrate into our writing, into our reading. But do you have the freedom to actually do that anymore?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I don't have the answer to that.
Me either. To
finish off the topic, Cam, one of the things that stands out to me when I still think of the uni days is how much we kind of had tunnel vision where, and I'm talking about our personal lives here, where sure, we had a good social life here and there, but where you were really, the only thing you had was passing that course. And then us three at that time didn't have our families with our partners and things then. But I was wondering now, as a father, how has your take on the job changed since now that you're a full-time father as well as being a full-time teacher?
It's really interesting, actually. I mean, I had my son was born very early on in my teaching career, my first 6 months. So my whole career, I've basically had young kids in the house. And I think that it really does pose its challenges. I have, and now that my kids are a bit older, you know, I've got a nearly 10-year-old son and he's into his sport and all that sort of stuff as well. So my weekends are taken up with that sort of stuff. I coach his cricket team. It takes up time. My wife works a lot of nights and weekends, so I'm constantly running to pick up kids from somewhere, or I'm home just with me and the kids at dinner time and all that sort of thing. So while it's fantastic to have, I have time off when my kids have time off from school, and that's a huge plus. I don't know how parents who have to continually work through school holidays and work through weekends, I don't know how they cope. It's really, really tough. At the same time, it places big demands on my professional life, where I have times where I have to say, I have family commitments, I've got commitments with my kids, and you do get a sense of guilt at times where you have work to do for your school, for your professional work that you need to do at home.
And Cam, I have to jump in there because that guilt you feel as a teacher, we shouldn't feel that. I mean, your family, and I can say this from, you know, being a new dad, I've only been a dad for just, you know, almost a year, your family's your priority. It has to be your priority. And if you have those commitments, you know, you almost, but you feel like, oh, look, I've got family commitments. You can kind of feel people going, oh, yeah, he's just trying to get out of it. But you do. You've got family commitments. Mm-hmm. You've got to go and pick him up for something. You've got to go to a doctor's appointment. You've got to do a wide variety of things.
You've got to have a day off when they're sick.
Well, that's why people go, oh, you know. But everyone's done it. You wish people just go, you know what, I totally understand. Mm-hmm. You take that day. I understand. Or, look, if you need to leave that meeting 20 minutes early, you go. I understand that, you know. Yeah. But you don't get that, do you? Yeah. Not so much anymore.
Yeah, I've always found that people at work are pretty understanding.
Yeah.
They do that. It's the, for me, it's more the personal sense of guilt where you go, oh, I'm leaving someone in the lurch, or I'm cutting something short because I don't have a choice. I have to go and do those things.
Isn't it interesting? Because you wonder. I wonder, and I'm just going to quickly riff on this personal guilt, because I think a lot of teachers feel that, and I think a lot of people in other professions would as well, so I'm certainly not saying that it's just a teacher thing. But I wonder whether that personal guilt for us stems from the fact of how personal our job is. Mm-hmm. So almost subconsciously you're invested in the fact that you are in charge of people, like little people, mm-hmm. and that even though your own kids are the most important in your world, that's just almost like a subconscious guilt, because it's just how we feel as teachers. Oh, you know, if I don't get this done, you know, I'm letting my team down, letting the kids down.
Yeah. I think there's a couple of things with that too. I think with our job, if we don't have something done or we don't get something done, in the majority of professions, if someone has to take a day off for whatever it is, or they can't get their work done over the weekend, it'll still be there on Monday.
Mm.
For us, oftentimes it just needs to be done anyway. So I myself find myself starting my work at home at 9, 9:30, 10 o'clock at night, and running through after midnight. That's a regular thing for me.
And that's the thing, you know, as well, being a new dad, is, you know, you've got to play it smarter, don't you? So the moment you have kids, you've got to play it smart, in the sense that you've got to choose the times when you do that work at home, or do I stay just an extra 20 minutes at school? Can I just have that to just get that little bit extra, because I know tonight I've got to coach my cricket team, you know, my son's cricket team, or I've got to go and do this. I just won't have the time or the energy to do it. You just got to play it smart. But anyway, we would love to go on more about this, wouldn't we? But we're running out of time, so we'll keep it there. But if you're in, you know, a family and you've got all those things, all that's changed, again, Facebook, Twitter, the blog, we'd love to hear from you.
Yeah, and we'd love to hear your routine. Cam's just shared with us how he kind of manages some of it. So everyone would have their own little niche that works for them. So please share.
So boys, the third topic for tonight is one that Rick, you shared during the week from a constant listener of ours, Aaron Davis, who's always listening and commenting. And thank you, Aaron, for that. It was a terrific article about what is a great teacher? Do we have great teachers now? Or is it about having great teams? Now, we spoke about earlier, Cam and Rick, about, you know, I mentioned collaboration and the collaboration between teams and how important it is to do that and everyone's being on the same page. Have we moved away from having great individual teachers, or the only way that I suppose we can be great these days is by having a great team, that then when you plan together and you do these things, either you then go away to your classroom and that helps you to become that great teacher?
Well, you know, yeah, absolutely, Adam. And I like the way you've kind of outline that, because Aaron's article was entitled "Are Great Teachers Bad Teachers?" And his main kind of point, which I really liked that he was making, was he said that I've lost count of how many times over my career I've been asked, think about a teacher who had an effect on your life and really, you know, changed your life. And he said he kind of wondered, like, what kind of teams were these teachers in, or like, were they in a team in the first place? And if we ask that question today, or if we think about that question being asked in the future about us and the people we work with today, is it really about a great teacher? Or is it kind of like, do we need to think about, you know, what was the team like that teacher came from? And I guess when we were at uni, you know, you kind of envisaged, you know, people being like, who is a great teacher? Am I going to be a great teacher? Mm. Well, I had a person who oversaw my practicum who was a great teacher, but, you know, I think we talked about collaboration earlier. My thinking after reading Aaron's article is that are we so collegiate these days that there's no such thing as just one great teacher who is kind of in their own little bubble?
Mm.
What do you think?
I think you absolutely need both. You can't have a great team without great individual teachers. Will be nothing. A great teacher on their own nowadays is going to burn themselves out very, very quickly. There is simply too much to do and too much to get through, too many responsibilities without having a great team around you.
Mm.
At the same time, great teachers will always be great teachers. And I think you'll also find that great teachers will lead great teams.
Mm. Yeah, great point.
That's a really good point. Just before we go to you, Adam, I'm just wondering if that question we always get asked, think of a great teacher in your life. What if, and this is what Aaron proposes, think of someone maybe who is not so much a great teacher. What about the team that was around them? Because like you said, Cam, a great teacher might lead a great team then. So does that great teacher make those other teachers great?
I think they make them better.
Yeah, I agree with you, Cam. I think they make them better. But I think it comes back to those years gone by. I don't think there was such a focus on teams. I think teachers might have been in the team, but there was far greater... They didn't have a responsibility to the team. You know what I mean? They could still... They kind of do things together. They probably still planned on their own. They probably still did things on their own.
Well, once the door was closed, they probably just did their own thing.
They did. And I think teams can sometimes, depending on the team you're in, and I've been in great teams. I've been in, you know, teams that were a bit of a struggle and those things over my decade of teaching. But I think sometimes a great teacher can be a great teacher. They've got a team that encourages them and it allows them to be a great teacher. You know what I mean? So they have these ideas and, yep, that sounds fantastic. Let's put it into our planner. I think great teachers can sometimes be sat on and squashed a bit when they've got these great ideas and they've got two or three other team members who go, we're not doing that. We don't like that. It's too much. We're not doing that. So this is what we're going to do as a team. And they're constantly dampened by that to the point where they get to the end of the year and go, oh, what a year I've had. Like, I haven't had an opportunity to be a great teacher because I haven't been allowed to be a great teacher.
I think in that regard that a great teacher like that who finds themselves in a position where they can't do their own thing is not in a good team.
Mm.
So therefore their team is going to not be as effective otherwise. I don't think you can have... You really do need both. I think great teams can develop great teachers. They can improve teachers dramatically, especially if it's a really supportive team.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. I agree with that. I think if I'm a good teacher, I think a lot of the things that I think that I do well have mainly come from the modelling that I've seen from mentors. I think.
Yeah, and I agree. And look, the big word that came out of Aaron's article was collaboration. And I think... I come back to that team thing that there's such a focus on being in a team that whatever your team plans, that's what you're doing. And if you go rogue, almost, I want to use the word go rogue, in that you decide that I'm not, you know what, stuff that writing lesson, I'm going to do the one I wanted to do, you can get in trouble. That people see you doing these different things, you might have your team lead or something go to the printer and go, you know what, we're planning these things and, you know, such and such is not doing these lessons, they're doing their own thing. You can actually get into trouble for that these days. Whereas back in the day, a great teacher might have just sat and listened and gone, yeah, no worries, and gone and closed the door and done their own wonderful things and no one cared in that sense.
Yeah, I think a good team still allows that to happen. I mean...
I agree.
There are times when different classes within the same team will have different needs. And as a team member, you need to be comfortable enough to be able to say, well, actually, my kids need this before. And it's often, I need to do this before I can move on to that. I find that these students have a whole range of skills that are missing, or they just need to consolidate a skill before we move on to that. And so good team members need to be able to say, they need to be able to trust their team member to say, well, actually, you're doing the right thing by your students. If you need to do it differently to cater for them, then that's what you need to do.
Does this mean then that maybe come... So there are the Victorian Education Excellence Awards that are awarded mainly to individual people. Now, I don't know for sure whether there's any kind of team awarding going on in there, but I'm just wondering, you know, like... Teachers, like anyone in other professions, are still awarded. People get awards for changes they've made. And I just wonder, you know, this conversation is going down the collegiate road. I don't know. Like, is it the...
That's right.
Is that a wrong award to give?
Has that teacher been given that award, but you think, gee, they had four or five people in their team who lifted them up, who supported their ideas and, you know, let's get behind this person, let's do those ideas and put them in place. And this person was kind of given this award to say, great stuff, but then they had... You know, three, four, five teachers in their team who supported them, lifted them up and gave them that. Do we need to give collegiate awards, collaboration awards, instead of just those individual teaching ones?
Well, I know schools get awards, but I'm just wondering whether teams get awards. Look, it's an interesting question. And if you have any more to enlighten us on, because we, as we always say, we don't pretend to be experts, please comment on the blog or anywhere else you can find us. Adam, it's your anecdote, and I know it's always a pleasure when there's a guest. Over to you.
It is. Well, see, it's my anecdote, but it's not really, because tonight we want to go down memory lane and we want to talk about the community project that we all had to do when we were at uni. And we've got a great memory about Cam's performance, I suppose, with the community project, where he made a wine rack. Now, I want to set up by saying that we hadn't seen the great man for a little while. Like, he'd been off the radar a little bit, obviously working hard and obviously with a part-time job and, you know, potential family on the way and all those sorts of things. He had a lot on his plate, but
I haven't seen him. I just think you're being too kind.
I think you're being far too kind, actually.
Well, I was trying to be kind. You've ruined it. So he was pathetic and lazy. And we hadn't seen him for a while. And then it was the day that we had to present this. And we're all quite nervous and give the presentation and things. And then he arrived. He turned up with this ginormous wine rack coming through the door. And we were all sort of taken aback by it, weren't we, Rick?
Well, was I? And this was for a technology subject, as yes. Cam said off air. But you had to get in touch with the community somehow in the whole planning of it. But we do remember he'd gone missing. And it was about halfway through the tutorial, Cam, that you showed up during someone else's presentation. And we heard the door go.
Possibly.
And it was a narrow doorway at Deakin Uni. I remember it was quite a small room, narrow doorway. But we just heard this boom. Which was Cam trying to sort of fit this wine rack through this narrow doorway, and I still got beautiful visions of it, Cam. Can you remember it?
Yes, I remember it vividly, and I've got to say, I've never lived it down from these gentlemen, amongst a number of other people. These guys are actually being quite kind. The ribbing I normally receive about this wine rack is something to behold.
And partly so, I might add.
Now, I reckon it was only a couple of years ago, Cam, at one of our catch-ups, that you actually revealed the truth behind why you'd gone missing. Because we just kind of imagined that, you know, the weight of all our due dates had kind of got to you, because that happens to all of us a few times, and that's why you'd gone missing. But as you told us about 2 years ago, there was a different story behind why we hadn't seen you for a while and why you showed up on that day with the wine rack. Please regale.
Yeah, this wine rack, it was something that I'd built at home, and it had to be a community project. So I said, well, my partner's part of my community, I'll build her a wine rack. So that was fine. But as part of this project, we had to actually go through... It was a design project where we had to go through the design process.
That's right.
And so to make this wine rack fit my project, I actually had to pull the whole thing apart. So that I could take photos.
So you'd already made it, is the thing.
Well, maybe.
Years ago, I think, is what the truth is. Yeah.
Can they take my degree off me 10 years later? I don't think so.
But it's funny you bring that up, because at the pointy end of uni, particularly, they do it differently now, but there was two semesters, wasn't there? At the pointy end of each semester, you got under the pump. Mm. And sometimes you had to find any way to get through. But I remember my community project as well. I didn't bring anything in for that, because I was, and I want to do quote unquote designing shelves for the place where I work to put their, you know, spirits and things on, because I work behind the bar there. And I remember taking photos and measuring it up. Someone else was doing it. They were already getting new shelving in. So all I did was take photos of that, measure it up, so this is what we're doing, and then took photos of the finished product, and I think I got quite a decent mark for that assignment. Didn't really do a thing, but except get out the measuring tape, measure it up, take photos, put it in, and but you've got to do it sometimes, because I am the worst person at putting this together. I mean, when I was in grade 5 and 6, my dad and I made a catapult that killed its own men. I mean, it shot, you flicked it up and the thing actually went backwards. I mean, I'm terrible at these sorts of things, so I had to find a way to get around it.
That is absolutely amazing. I think the truth is coming out here. Let's hope the old lecturers aren't listening to this. But my community project, the same one, was I was trying to develop some sort of marketing and sales pitch for my drum lessons that I was giving at a local school. I'm a drummer. I was teaching drums. So I went to a friend of mine who was a graphic artist, and I told him my pitch. I said, this is what I want to do. I want to make ads. And then he, like you said, Kat, the design, he went through the whole design process. And when I got my mark back for the assignment, old Bill, who was our tutorer, said, great project, but you were supposed to go through the design process, not the person who actually made it for you. And I thought, I've been stitched up. I didn't get away with it.
So we can say that you bought your degree.
Yeah. Did I think you get for that? Did he right. take marks off for that?
I think I got a lowish credit. I tell you what, it's a good looking ad though. It was fantastic.
Yeah. But at the same time, you engage the community though. I mean, what do they think we are? Like some unbeliever, we've got all these talents and things like that. I think that's a bit harsh.
Look, the bloke who's a graphic artist is a friend of mine. I bought him a beer. I'd like to think he did carry me through that.
But then you did contribute to the community because you could have put it out there and said, this is my friend who did it. If you ever want to see him for graphic designing needs, this is the person to see. I think that's perfect.
Well, why don't we put it out there to all our listeners that for Cam's wine rack, Adam, for your shelving at the bar you worked at, for my drum lessons, does it count? What do you think?
So, boys, that brings it into the Term 1 final episode. It's been great to have Cam on. As we said at the beginning, we've been trying to get him on for a while, and I think one of the highlights that I've really enjoyed about this is every answer Cam gives is well thought out, and he's got a lot of knowledge about teaching and a lot of experience as well that he's been able to share with us. And hopefully one day down the track, Cam, we might be able to get you on again.
That would be good.
Yeah.
It has taken a while, and I must admit it's been great. And we like to get... We've always said that the title of our show is Two Regular Teachers, and that's what we want. And the three of us have kind of feel like that, and it's nice to be able to reflect on the job, isn't it, Cam?
It certainly is. It's been a pleasure being able to come in and talk with you gentlemen.
Good on you, Cam. That's great. And look, we've got lots to come ahead in Term 2 too, don't we, Rick? We'll have lots of different topics, and the podcast will go on.
Well, for Victorian teachers, it's a marathon term coming up.
Yeah. It's 11 weeks, isn't it?
Next term. So we will try and churn out as many episodes as we can in that 11 weeks.
We may even say that there may be a little bit of a break period in there when reporting really hits its peak, where we may need to spend a bit more time on our actual reporting than the podcast. But
although sometimes it's a great outlet, isn't it?
True.
To get a bit of a break.
Yeah, true. So let's finish up. So for me, Adam LaVar,
and me, Cameron O'Neill.
Me, Rick Kayla Thompson, and the three of us have been three regular teachers.